Eliza Doolittle in the movie My Fair Lady has had enough of talk. Don't talk of love lasting through time. Make me no undying vow. Show me now. Sing me no song. Read me no rhyme. Don't waste my time. Show me. Don't talk of June. Don't talk of fall. Don't talk at all. Show me. We all want reassurance. We all want to know for sure that we're doing the right thing, that we're on the right track. For Moses, as he struggles to lead the people, mere words of encouragement and affirmation are not enough. Show me, he says. Let me see, Lord, he pleads. Let me see God, then trusting will be easy. Keeping on the road will be easy. Well, let's face it, if you'll pardon the pun, face to face would be a lot easier. Enough of Zoom, face to face is the name of the getting to know you game. Otherwise, you're kind of in the dark. After all, how do you describe the indescribable? How do you talk about the ineffable? How do you express the inexpressible? Say you were commissioned to construct a stained glass window that illustrates the theme of the glory of God or what God looks like. What would you choose? Or maybe you're like the little kid at Sunday school who does a strange looking picture. What's that? Says his teacher. Oh, that's a picture of God. But Johnny, no one knows what God looks like. They do now, says Johnny. What signs and symbols would you use? What artistry and poetry would you try to weave together to catch hold of the impossible mystery that is the glory of God? A mere list of attributes would never do it at all, never do justice. A mere description would be cold and lifeless. Sometimes only poetry will do to describe in glances and glimpses the glory of God. And that works fine as far as it goes. The Bible is happily full of imagery and metaphors and comfortable with pictures and parables to draw us into the cloud of unknowing that is our faltering attempt to talk about God, our puny humanity seeking to wrap in stammering words the cosmic majesty of God. Nice try, but no cigar. Glances and glimpses at best, if we're very lucky, very blessed, very enlightened. And people kind of understand that, they live with it, and it works fine until some other people get the poetry mixed up with the narrative, and they miss the point that poetry and symbol are different from hard fact and reality. And then all the nonsense starts and the literal mind kicks in that wants it all tied up with ribbons and clear cut and definite, with no gaps, no spaces. God in a neat linguistic box. Gotcha. Or like that other little boy who asks, is God everywhere? Yes. Is he in this milk bottle? Yes. Got him. We begin to think God is in this creed or in this confession of faith or in these definitions or in this church. Got him. In some forms of Christianity, no one is ever allowed to say, actually, I don't really know, to be honest. By definition, you haven't got him, however cleverly devised your definitions might be. Moses wanted more than ideas and dogma about God. He wanted some experience that would take him beyond cold, hard statements and into the newness, the wonderment, the mystery that God has to be and always will be to mere mortals like ourselves with all our limits and limitations. In truth, we know instinctively that if we could totally absorb God in our thinking, if we could absolutely encapsulate him in our language, if we could hold him in our head or in our heart, he would have to be a pretty second-rate, second-order, inadequate deity, a God made in our image instead of us made in his. We need to understand that no matter how hard we try, how ingenious we are, how really, really brainy we are, we can't do it. We can't define, explicate, deconstruct and contain God. And if anyone says they can do it, they're wrong. That doesn't mean to say we don't talk about him at all. Just as we can't stop ourselves thinking and talking about love, though we know we will never catch it and hold it and keep it in our grasp. I once held up a £50 note at senior school assembly and I offered it to any of the pupils who could bring me a box of love. I still have that £50 note if anyone would care to claim it. We know, however wonderful, real, crucial, life-changing love is, we cannot contain it in any of our boxes. Because it is so wonderful and real and crucial and life-changing. We can only wonder at it, sing about it, fall silent before its mystery. We write poems about it. We eagerly look for its reality in our life. Its full measure may slip through our fingers like mercury, but we still write the songs and we still sing them. We need to allow, though, that when Moses talks about hearing God's voice, seeing God's face, God hiding his face behind his hand so that Moses can only glimpse his back, that we're now in that realm where language struggles to cope with the indescribable mystery of God, and where poetry and symbol do their threadbare best to demonstrate the truth. The glory of God, of course, too bright to bear. The holiness of God, not surprisingly, too hot to handle. So men and women, even the best believers, take refuge in pictures and powerful images of majesty, shielding us from the fiery transcendence that is the being of God. It must have been great to be Moses and have God speak to you. But does he speak to us? The glory of God, it seems, is revealed to Moses, at least a glimpse of it, but do these kind of things happen to us? Well, they can do, perhaps, when we allow them to, in particular places. A magnificent cathedral with stained glass windows of shocking loveliness, a mountaintop, a pink sunset splashed across the snow, the dark vault of a sharp winter's night lit with a billion stars. If we are listening at those moments, in those places, he speaks. He reminds us of our smallness and the miracle that he knows our name and cares about our little life. Though in truth, I was actually round in the cathedral recently with some visitors from America, and I'm not sure God would have really had the chance to speak to anyone there. Everyone was too busy taking pictures with their phones. It wasn't quite a place where people were in the zone of creative stillness before the majesty of God. Certainly didn't look or sound like that. God speaks to us when people demonstrate care, gather around us in loving support. People here know what that feels like, and they tell me, and I know from experience, it feels like being enfolded by grace and undergirded by love. And there are those not so comfortable moments when people challenge us and rebuke us with important truths. And if we're listening, he speaks through the medium of a wise mentor, a kindly friend. Someone I know calls those times God moments. God meets us and we glimpse his character in moments of private devotion, stillness, when for a while we hush our busy lives and have the discipline to wait on God. He comes to our life. If we give him the space, the time, the opening. And again, we have a role to play in this. If we are never still, never silent, never waiting, he certainly will not bully his way into our thinking. God moments, out there or in here, we need to allow them to happen. God speaks to us and we glimpse his glory in holy places of pilgrimage, where the mood is set and the whole experience is baptised in the countless prayers of the people. Something special, something sacred this way comes when we give our attention, our focus, open our hearts to that searching, that possibility. We need to be more open to more of those journeys, more of those opportunities. I absolutely believe God speaks to us and we catch a glimpse of his character, his nature, in worship and through preaching. We find healing and challenge and call in those times. A word of comfort or of summons, of inspiration or of hope. Real messages to our life. People say, it's as if the preacher was speaking to me and he didn't even know my situation. Didn't know my inner circumstances, the burden I was carrying, the cold emptiness within, the pain in my soul. And yet there was that word, there was that call, there was that truth, too deep to deny. You forgive me.